Yo, yo, I'm Eric Tornberg. Welcome to another episode of Maker Stories, where we explore what makes the makers, what drives them, what they're scared of, how they make sense of the world, and everything in between. This week's episode is with Tucker Max. Tucker is the author of I Hope They Serve Beer in Hell, Assholes Finish First, and recently a book called Mate. He angel invested for a bit before giving it up to focus on his new company, Book in a Box, which is book writing as a service. We recorded this episode in March of 2015, which was before he gave up investing, before he launched his company, and before he launched his new book, Mate. But other than that, everything is totally up to date. This was a fun episode. A theme for me this year has been befriending people who are widely hated and then getting them on the podcast and kind of liking them a little bit. It's weird that you can judge someone who you've never met based on something someone else said who you also never met, and that's like the internet. And it's really unfortunate. I want to suggest something. You know how you should like buy locally, even though often you don't do that? You should also hate locally. Judge what you know so you can judge it with authority. And there's probably someone you don't know who, as soon as you hear his or her name, you say, I hate that person. That person sucks. And maybe they do suck, but I would challenge us to at least meet the person to confirm whether or not they suck. If you're going to judge, judge locally. Or recognize the non-duality of everything and that we are all one person, that if they suck, we suck, and we're all in it together. But maybe that is for a new episode. Tucker Max, take it away.
I'm very excited to have our guest Tucker Max on the show. First off, how are you feeling, man?
Good. I feel good, man. I've had so much fucking caffeine. I'm ready to...
You're ready to
my
go.
Eyes are bugging out, yeah.
You came here from Austin.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Austin, Texas. I've lived there for like 5 or 6 years.
For sure. And we have we got connected about maybe a couple months ago because you're a big fan of products. You're looking for the next new companies, you know.
I've been investing in tech companies since maybe 2010, 2011. I'm in about 50 companies now. And I'm a sort of a junkie of you
right.
guys.
And it's fascinating because some people don't know this because Tucker Max, obviously a very famous name, but firstly famous for your works, for your novels, for your books. And so some people are curious, how does the Tucker Max who's writing bestsellers and the Tucker Max that everyone knows, how do you get into tech? Take us through that journey. What happened?
Well, I mean, there's an obvious easy way to get into investing, and that's have money, right? So you kind of start there, right? But basically, man, it's like because a lot of people knew who I was for something else, it was really easy to get attention. You know, just like Chamillionaire, and there's a lot of other sort of people from other fields who are Nas are sort of moving into tech. Because I think once you have attention and an audience, then people in tech want to talk to you because one of the things, tech's good at a lot of things. They don't tend to be really good at talking to people in a way that people listen to and right. respond to. They're not really good at marketing. They're not good at branding. They're not good at selling themselves. They're not good at telling stories. And I mean, generally, of course, there are obviously exceptions. And so I have that skill. And so once I'm in the door, then it's like, okay, here's what I like about your company. Here's 6 things you can do better. And then if the 6 things I say are smart, then people start listening to me for my ideas instead of, you know, it's not hard to get a meeting. Right. But you have to be impressive in the meeting, which I'm not always, right? If I was impressive in all my meetings, I'd probably be in a lot more companies. But there's enough people that need help in this area that I'm good at that there's a lot of overlap.
So you started investing in 2010. That's about 10 companies a year?
Yeah, I went slowly at first because I'm not very good at it and I didn't have a lot of connections and so it just kind of more ramped up. I probably was in 2 or 3 companies, 2010, then 5, then 10, then you know recently a bunch.
And before we get into your thesis and how you pick these companies, let's just say you know I don't know exactly the year that you maybe 2010 or whenever you decided you wanted to get into tech, you've built this platform for yourself through your books, you know through the movies. What are you, how are you kind of thinking, okay, this is going to be the next level of Tucker Max's career. What is the ultimate dream, the ultimate vision? What are you trying to do?
You mean for me professionally?
Yeah. Yep.
Man, I don't know. You want me to make up some story about how, I've got this long-term vision. I don't fucking know, dude.
You were just fascinated by it?
Yeah, it's fun to me and it's interesting. Like, so I've sold a lot of books, and so I'm lucky enough that I don't have to work anymore if I don't want to. I mean, I can't buy a jet yet or anything, but if I'm not stupid, then I'm good, right? Although,
Are you not stupid?
No, I'm pretty stupid too. That's part of the problem. Okay. I have a kid now, so if I have a bunch more, then maybe I'm going to have to get back to work. But so basically, man, it's like I just followed. I don't want to say I followed my passion because that's nonsense. I followed what I found interesting. And I felt like so many people in tech were doing so much awesome, interesting things that I found really interesting and compelling, not even because it had anything to do with my books, but because it was fucking cool. You know, I mean, you have this community of people who are builders and optimists and positive and like are willing and able to make changes to the world that help people. That's fun to sort of be a part of, even if it's just a tiny part tangentially.
And out of all the things you could have invested in and all the kind of paths, you know, you could have doubled down on movies, you could have doubled down on different types of things. How did you get exposed to tech? You know, what first kind of industry?
Like, I was one of those. I got into writing by accident. And basically, no one would publish my stuff in 2002. So I put up a website, and this is like when GeoCities was still a thing, right? And so I had to learn how to code HTML. And so I had to build my own platform and audience before anyone even thought about this as sort of a thing. This is before MySpace. This is before Friendster even, right? And so I had to learn these things, and I sort of became part of that community or just watched and learned. And then once, you know, I did it for my books and my sort of content. And then I realized after a few years, I was way better at this than almost anyone else, at least in my field, in the sort of author, writer, content maker field. Not because I was that smart. I was just watching smart people in tech and kind of imitating what they were doing in my division of, you know, my field.
Right. So let's talk about your investments. Do you have a... Is your thesis just whatever you find interesting? What types of companies do you invest in?
I have a very complicated thesis. It's if I think the company does something really awesome, then I put money in. Like, that's it, man. I try and stay in fields where I know what I'm talking about. Like, I just met the Bohemian Guitars guy, right? I don't know shit about guitars. I don't play guitars. It looks great. I'm not going to invest. Nothing against him. I just don't know, right? Whereas, you know... Partender is another company I invested in. I know alcohol. I grew up in the restaurant business. I've had a couple drinks in my life, and I saw this app, and I immediately knew. I've been bartending for years, or I had been. I'm like, oh, my God, you can turn inventory upside down. I called them up, and I'm like, I want to put money in right now, and I want to be an advisor. Here's everything I can bring. I knew immediately it was going to be a hit. So I just stay in my lane. That's it.
And what's interesting, so on Product Hunt, we see everyone's got, like, every day there's a new music discovery app. Everyone, you know, music is very popular. What isn't as popular is, in terms of making apps, is books.
Right.
But Goodreads sold for like...
Man, nobody reads. Half the people bought my books didn't read them. That's the way it works. So, people buy books for totally other reasons. Totally different reasons.
Why do they buy books?
To signal, man. To put up bunches of books on their walls, to look smart, or because...
So what do they
buy
your
number
books?
Of other reasons. They might, some of them read my books, I guess, but no, dude, you can actually look at, there's a couple of companies now that can track how people read ebooks, and the numbers are crazy. Most people don't finish most books. I actually did. My books, seriously, like, not even to brag, because this isn't much of a brag. My books had a pretty high finish rate, but my books are entertaining. They're meant to be funny and entertaining, so everything in the book is about keeping your attention, right?
Right.
I mean, that's how I make money, is you laugh and you tell someone else and they buy it. Most academic intellectual books are written for the author to signal for themselves, not to actually help people.
I'm curious, is there an opportunity in the book space? I mean, Goodreads sold for $200 million to Amazon.
Huge, huge
and
opportunity.
Their design is awful.
Huge.
I know.
So, like, the way content works, there's sort of three categories. There's distribution, discovery, and creation, right? And I think, like, Ben, what's his face? It's Strategy did a great piece about this in this great U-shaped column. And like, most of the money is in distribution or creation, but there's far less in discovery. But there's no one doing discovery right, because if you're selling content, you can't do discovery right because incentives kind of mess everything up. The best example is Amazon, right? And then if you're distributing content, you can't make it because, again, the incentives screw everything up. Google's never going to be a content creation factory. They've tried and it's all failed. So if you can be, discovery needs to be about a source that people trust, that has authority, that can find all the massive stuff and distill it and curate it down into a usable or a functional stream for most people. And I think here's the problem with discovery. Old discovery used to be about like book reviews. And so basically it was elites in media telling you what you should be reading or watching. That world has flipped and there are no more elites. And so now what discovery needs to be about is figuring out what I like and matching me with my tastes, not telling me what is good or bad, right? Like, I think 50 Shades of Grey is terrible. 100 million women disagree with me. Cool, no problem. Don't put it in my feed, but put it in someone else's.
I want your honest answer. Is, and I know you would give me nothing less, is Books Hunt, Product Hunt expanding to books a good idea? If so, how so? If not, why not?
It depends. So if you structure it just like Product Hunt, I don't think it'll work because a bunch of people will say, oh, I'm supposed to like this book, and they'll upvote it, and it'll be a boring, crappy book, but like, oh, I'm supposed to like it because it's by this fancy person and whatever. Discovery has to be curated in a way that it fits the user's needs. That's what makes Product Hunt so genius and brilliant, is that you guys have such... I mean, it started with Ryan literally curating a list. And that aesthetic and that that choice matrix has enveloped... That's become what Product Hunt is, and that community has built off of that. And there are a lot of people who share his aesthetic. And so that's great discovery. Book Hunt would have to be built the same way, but with a different person and a different sort of aesthetic, and it would have to be built from an aesthetic that is inherently about finding the best thing for other people and that curation method. So you can't slap Book Hunt on top of Product Hunt. They're different DNA, you know?
Absolutely. And we're going to get to Book in a Box in a second, but have you invested in any or advising any books companies in the space? Or do you
No.
Ever-
no.
Do you have a request?
They're all terrible.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you have a request for books companies to be built specifically, or you just kind of don't want to be in the space?
Dude, I don't know. I'm not as smart as like Sam Altman, Paul Graham. I don't have a list of ideas. Wouldn't it be cool if this company would exist? And I'm like, God damn, that would be cool. No, I'm not that smart.
Awesome. So let's also talk about you're investing, but let's talk about Book in a Box. Tell everybody what it is. You launched a Product Hunt last week.
So yeah,
you killed it.
We launched on Product Hunt last week. You guys are amazing. I owe you guys drinks or dinner. I probably made $70,000 off of you guys, and I feel bad. Like, well, I'm up on stage talking nonsense. Like, oh yeah, we're even. Product Hunt. We launched on Product Hunt. Basically, I started a company because it was a real need I was meeting for somebody. We basically take writing. We turn writing and publishing into a service. So if you have an idea for a book. Like, let's say you want to write a book on how to launch a community, right? You have a lot of expertise on this now. You and Ryan could write a great book about that. But you're either too busy or you're not a good writer. You don't want to deal with the writing and publishing process. You pay us $15,000 and spend 12 hours on the phone with us. We do everything. We, you know, take your ideas, organize them into an outline, 3 to 5 page outline, and then you basically, we interview you off the outline, get everything out of your head into an audio recording, transcribe it, and then we have a separate editor who essentially turns your words into book prose. Then we do the rest of the publishing process, and you have a finished book.
And who are some of the people are you most excited to work with or have worked with? Or
So it's funny. The whole company started because I met this woman at an entrepreneur dinner, and she's very successful in the retail space. And she's like, look, I have this amazing idea for a book. Everyone's been asking me to write this for 5 years, but I'm dyslexic and I don't have time. I have this, you know, like crazy busy consultancy. How can I get a book without writing it? And of course, I laughed at her. I'm like, well, I want to be in the NBA. How can I do that without being good at basketball? And she's like, you know, kind of like looks at me and I'm like, look, you have to write a book to have a book. That's part of the process. Yeah. And I start kind of lecturing her about hard work, right? Like an asshole. And she rolls her eyes at me and stops me and says, Tucker, I'm an entrepreneur. Are you an entrepreneur? I'm like, yeah, of course. I'd like to think I am. She's like, okay, at my job, I solve problems. What do you do at your job? I'm like, I solve problems too. She's like, great. Are you going to solve my problem or lecture me about hard work? And I was like, fuck, she was totally right. 100% correct. And I sat there like a little boy, like, all right, I don't know what to do now because I got punked. And then I obsessed over this because she was totally right and I was looking at this totally wrong. And eventually the process just kind of dawned on me. A book is about getting an idea out of one person's head into a medium where it can go to millions of others. So writing is a way to do that, but it doesn't have to be the only way. We're transmitting ideas right now through speaking, podcasts are a way, video, etc. Why can't I turn someone's sort of ideas into speech and turn that into a book without like them having to spend all the time at writing? Writing is a skill that is distinct from thinking and distinct from having good ideas, right? It can be part of the book process, but not necessary. So I basically tested this thesis with her and my co-founder, Zach, and we turned in an amazing book, actually. It's funny. She's gotten all this media now. She just signed a multi-million dollar deal to consult with Simon or one of the big mall companies. She just pop-up retail. And it's like she's gotten 1,000x return on her book. She's like, this is amazing. Thank you so much. I couldn't have picked a better first client for us to launch us. And it's all because I was an asshole and she called me out. It was a pretty good story, yeah.
Yeah. It that seems to do well for you.
Right. It does.
Asshole,
I'm an asshole and then I fall ass backwards into success. Yes. It's fucking unfair. It's total bullshit. Right. I know.
Let me ask. So I'm curious. Why do you take the money on the front end? Why not become like Y Combinator for authors?
Right.
And you get equity of all these different.
Because that model is really fucking stupid for content. Right. It's great for Y Combinator. I wish I could do that. But here's the problem. When you're partnering with the creator, then you're basically betting on them. You're picking winners.
Yeah.
As we should have learned over the last 10 years, you cannot pick winners. And every entertainment business that's in the business of picking winners is going to be beaten out by the company that's in the business of basically managing the process for creators. Because if I'm a creator and I think I have winners, if I have the option between paying up front for a company to do all the services and I own everything, or partnering with a company and they get the upside, chances are I'm going to take the services company. It's not quite that simple, obviously, because there's ways to partner that make sense. In book publishing, it doesn't really make a lot of sense, at least for nonfiction and for books. A lot of people use books more than to just sell. Like if I'm we're writing a book about how to do our process to generate leads for our company. That books are a great way to generate leads, to establish authority, to raise speaking fees, consultancy, any number of things. For that reason, there's just not a lot. It doesn't make any sense for us to take the upside. Our job is to create the best book possible from this person's ideas, not to like try and bet on the success or lack of success. Like in Melissa's case, she sold 500 books, right? That's nothing. But she's made millions of dollars off the book. So how would we share in that? Doesn't really make sense, you know?
Got it. Cool. So I don't want to focus on this, but I do want to mention it because I'm getting a few messages about it. And I'm kind of rephrase the messages that I'm getting. There's obviously a lot of people loved your books. Right. And some people had a big problem with it. Right. How do those people kind of reconcile the skepticism they had of you from those books to the person that you are now, and seeming that they might want to work with you or that you might want to work with them? How do they kind of reconcile that?
I don't know. And that's not my problem. Yeah. No, I mean, seriously, like, who doesn't? My books are about the stupid stuff I did in my 20s. I got drunk, I fell down, I threw up on myself. I mean, not everyone's done that, but most of us have. I just wrote the truth about what I did. Some people found it funny, some people didn't. If they don't like me, you don't need to work with me. That's fine. There's a lot of reasons not to like me. It's fine. I've got, it's cool. Like, it doesn't bother me.
Have there been some companies that you were talking to and they felt uncomfortable for a certain reason and then you're like, oh, man, I really wanted to work with you?
Yeah, I mean, so.
Or do you have anything to say to those people who have those opinions?
I don't worry about it. It's not. It's just not. I don't spend my time worrying about paths that I've closed off by the prior actions I've taken. I'm willing to pay the price for pay the consequences for the choices I've made. Some are good, some are bad. That's the way life works, if people have some problem with me, that's cool. Like, I'm not even mad at them. That's their choice, and they can even have legit reasons, I guess, sometimes. I don't know. I mean,
yeah.
I see them as separate things, and I a lot of people like to sort of like, oh, this person's good, this person's evil. Life just doesn't work like that. It's not that black and white. But what am I going to do? I'm not going to chase someone down and convince them, no, I'm a good person. I have more than enough friends and more than enough business with people who get it. So I just don't, right. I don't really worry about the other side.
And it's worth mentioning that you have a kid now, you're in your late 30s. Married.
Married with a kid.
It's kind of a different lifestyle for you right now.
Dude, I have the most boring lifestyle. Like, a big night out for my wife and I is like going to a wine tasting.
Awesome.
Like, seriously, dude. Like, it's funny. It's totally boring and sad and pathetic in a way, but I love it. I loved going out and getting drunk and being an idiot in my 20s, and I love not doing that in my 30s. Just like I loved playing with G.I. Joes when I was 10 and I didn't do it when I was 20. We just change and go through phases, you know?
How does deal flow work for you? Being, not in Silicon Valley and not all the industry.
Right. So I know a lot of people. I have a lot of friends. It's kind of funny. When you do something famous in any area, like I'm sure like who's coming on? What rapper's coming on tomorrow?
G-Eazy.
Right. G-Eazy will probably tell you the same thing. Like, if you're good at something outside of tech, a lot of people in tech will know who you are randomly. Like, I can't tell you how many VCs or entrepreneurs or whatever, like, oh, dude, I love your books or whatever. So it's really easy once you get to know someone to get deal flow if you're famous in a separate area. It's actually kind of harder if you're only good in tech because you're competing with everyone in tech. I'm like this weird anomaly that stands outside. And so I just ended up going to conferences, meeting people. Once you meet one person, you meet all their friends. Like, you guys have Tim Chang coming up next.
Yep.
Tim's amazing. I had dinner with Tim last night because I know Kamal Ravikant really well. He's one of my best friends, and I got to know him through somebody else. And so, you build relationships. That's how you get deal flow. That's the short answer. There's no better way to get deal flow than building relationships, and I'm really good at building great relationships with good people. Even though I'm an asshole, right? All my friends, Kamal and Tim Chang are the nicest people on earth. They're the best humans
absolutely.
On earth. Yeah.
And it's extra anomaly because in music, for example, I mean, music is just so intertwined with business and musicians, like Nas and Snoop and Chameleon, all these guys are so smart. But in the literary world, or authors for the longest time, and even still, have kind of separated themselves from the selling and the marketing of their work. Are you finding that that's going to change, or are you going to be an anomaly for a long time?
Worlds? It's a good question. There are a lot of authors who are starting to understand this. James Patterson basically runs a content mill. James Frey actually is following his model, and those two are making bank. They produce content, though, right? And they own it all. They have a different model from what I'm doing. Here's the thing. Being an author used to be something that people wanted, or being a writer, because it was a status symbol, right? Now anyone can get published. I don't think being a writer is a status symbol anymore. What's a status symbol now is saying shit that people care about, right? Doing things that matter, which is great. So I think a lot of the people who are going to do really well with books and authors are not going to be people who are primarily writers. They're going to be people who have learn something or have something to say that's really helpful to the rest of the world. I'm not even trying to pitch you guys, but you and Ryan could write a fantastic book, and you've written good blog posts about this, about how to build a community, right? That'd be really beneficial probably to a lot of people in the audience, right? I could see you guys writing books that are amazing and that help a lot of people and build a lot of things, and you guys will be far more influential as authors than some snooty literary novelist who's like, oh, I'm a fancy writer. No one gives a shit, dude. No one finishes your book,
Right. And it's interesting when they have that data about who finishes and who doesn't.
The Goldfinch is one of the best-selling, Goldfincher or Goldfinch, it's like one of the best-selling books of the year. Something like 80% of people quit by page 200 or something like that.
And Donna Tartt, I love her. She writes a book like every 10 years. Right. That's just her life's work and just the short attention span.
You know why people buy the book? And I'm not putting her down at all. The book's fantastic. I actually liked it a lot.
Yeah, I love that.
But most people buy those books because they think they're supposed to, or because it's a status thing. Whereas, like, you look at a book that people actually enjoy, which is 50 Shades of Grey, that book sold 100 million copies because women really liked it. And I guess guys, too, but mostly women really liked that book. For whatever reason. It doesn't really matter. They did. It brought real enjoyment to the life. And that's fiction's a little different than nonfiction. People buy fiction for entertainment and escape. People buy nonfiction for ROI, essentially, right? Some form of that. So you have to look at them a little bit differently. But, yeah, they're still books, though.
Awesome. And are you now writing? you know, about tech, or is your write, how has your writing life kind of evolved?
And, you know, I feel like everything I could write about tech is said by other people who are smarter than me, who are better at it, right? Like, I'll have some cool thought. I'm like, oh, I'm going to write a post about this. And then I'll see that Paul Graham wrote the same thing better 6 years ago. Yeah. So it's like, come on. Like, I need to pollute the world with more bullshit. I try not to say something unless I feel like it's both relatively unique and definitely valuable to at least some set of people.
Well, I think what's interesting is that there's not that many stories. You know, there's a lot of Medium posts, a lot of blogs, but you're a storyteller in at heart.
Yeah, there's a lot of stories. People just don't know how to tell them. Yeah. That's actually one of the main reasons why one of my companies, Steven Bluestein is back here, Pride Bites, that I advise, really what I've helped them do is learn how to tell their story better. They have an amazing company, an amazing set of tools. And like when they came to me, they're like, we make pet toys. And I'm like, no one cares, right? And then they kind of ran through the company to me, and I was like, guys, this is an amazing platform you've built. You've built Foxconn for pet products. You need to tell your story better. And so I helped them sort of learn how to pitch, man. Whoever becomes the person that learns how to or that establish themselves as the story teacher for entrepreneurs will make a lot of money, because most entrepreneurs tell terrible stories even when they have good stories to tell. And the person that can teach that will make a lot of money, because they'll help a lot of people.
When are you going to be in Shark Tank? Or some sort of show?
You know, I would love to be on Shark Tank, except I would never take any of those terrible fucking deals. Yeah. Like, it's the worst,
yeah,
dude. I know Cuban pretty well. And he tells me, he's like, yeah, like, I get, like, our deals are not very good, but we're it's a different consumer products, which is usually what they are, is a different world of investing. And they're sort of offering a different set. It's not like, they're not deals that I care about. And my company doesn't need to raise money. We're crazy profitable. So the only reason we'd go on, we'd have like, I'd be the person that went on. I'm giving 5% of my company for $10 million. And I'd be an obnoxious dick and not take any deals. And then, you know, Damon would call me out and be like, you're not here to make a deal. It'd be one of those. And it's like, who wants to do that?
Absolutely. Well, awesome. Thank you for coming on. And everybody, give it up for Tucker Max.
Thank you.
Absolutely.